Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. I've got some top news stories for you today from Israel, and guess what? You're listening, so you're already on top of your game. Survive and thrive, people. Knowledge is the best weapon. Today is Tuesday, December 26th, 2023 in the Gregorian calendar, and the 14th of Tevet, 5784 in the Hebrew calendar. This broadcast was produced on the ground in Tel Aviv. It's a special episode with details from a day-long trip that I took to Kibbutz Kfar Aza. I encourage you to stay on until the end of this special report, where I'll include comments from a Muslim Israeli who is volunteering with Zaka. That's a non-governmental organization that specializes in international search and rescue. This time, the international crew needed to operate on Israeli soil. These individuals played a major role in picking up body parts of people that were killed during this mass casualty event on October 7th. If you did not know this, a Jewish person is meant to be buried with as many of his or her body parts as possible. And this young Muslim man, has been trained in all the Jewish laws so that he could join this crew in picking up the piece of the Israeli nation limb by limb. You're going to want to hear what he has to say about this heinous attack and the ongoing war. I can tell you that. Now, let's get to the news. On November 13th, 2023, I went down to Kfar Aza. I drove down to the south of the country with an Argentine vlogger. We arrived together at the meeting point and jumped out of our car onto the foreign press bus. The trip was led by the government press office. It was just more than a month following the mass murder of 1,200 Israelis and foreign nationals on October 7th. Hamas not only took full responsibility for the atrocities, but they filmed it with GoPros and body cams. And then they shared the footage with the world by publishing it on social media, terrorizing people's friends, families, and any person who saw it. 240 people were taken that day into Hamas captivity. In Gaza, 60 people were killed in Kfar Aza. 17 people were abducted from Kfar Aza. Kfar Aza is a kibbutz located in southern Israel, situated between the cities of Netivot and Sderot, about 5 kilometers or 3 miles east of Gaza. It was established a few years after Israel's independence in August of 1951 by Jewish immigrants and refugees from Egypt and Tangier, which is a city in Morocco. In 2021, Kfar Aza had a population of 765. The kibbutz played a significant role in the development of automated watering systems for farms. One of its economic contributors is Kafrit Industries, which is a plastics manufacturer, and it's traded on the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange. On October 7th, 2023, the Jewish people had a large mass murder, the largest following the Holocaust. Around 70 Hamas militants attacked this specific village, which killed some 60 civilians and destroyed property everywhere. Homes were burnt down to the ground. Some residents were kidnapped. The Israel Defense Forces only regained control of the village by October 11th, 2023. They found the dead bodies of 20 Hamas terrorists, plus paragliders that Hamas had used to literally fly over the border and wreak havoc. The army also found a load of undetonated hand grenades. You may be wondering how, if the army only took over the village days later, were there 20 dead Hamas men in the kibbutz? I cannot speak precisely for this kibbutz, but many of the terrorists killed on October 7th were actually killed by civilians who had and knew how to operate guns. I walked around to witness the sheer destruction of this kibbutz. Homes were burnt to the ground, garbage strewn everywhere, roofs blown in, bullet holes were through every wall, blood sprayed across white walls, bullet holes through the handles of doors, clearly so that people could enter homes and rooms that had been locked. There were bloody handprints and hand marks under window panes. If you did not catch a previous episode of mine where you heard from a young woman who is waiting for her parents to come home from captivity in Gaza, I want to share with you what many interviewees told me on the record, which was that their homes were invaded first by terrorists, but then by a load of Palestinian looters from Gaza who followed the terrorists after the kidnappings, after the killings were done. Looters entered people's homes and stole appliances, documents, whatever they wanted, even sweatshirts and sneakers from little kids. That has not gotten almost any coverage in the media. I've never seen any coverage of that in American media. While I was at Kfar Aza, I heard the IDF dropping bombs in Gaza. I heard IDF artillery. And you're going to hear some of that in the background of the following clips that I'm going to play for you that I recorded myself on that day. David Baruch is an IDF spokesperson. He took us into a section of the kibbutz geographically closest to Gaza. And that was the section of the kibbutz where the young people lived, including teens, young families with little children, and young people who may have just gotten back from the army and were trying to start their lives. I'm going to play you clips that I recorded with a variety of people from this day. All of them I did on camera, and I'm going to be producing a video of this later. Let's first hear a conversation I had with spokesman Baruch, and then we'll hear a little more about the young people's section of the kibbutz from a woman named Susie Asnai Arania. She works for the Prime Minister's Office in Public Diplomacy.
Hamas terrorists came from right over there, about 3 kilometers away from Gaza, into this community. We're in Kfar Aza right now. We're in the community primarily of young singles and young couples with one or two kids. And this is the road that they lived on here, and one more road down there. This specific road, I've been told, only two people have survived. Kfar Aza is a kibbutz. Around 800 people used to live here. A quarter of them, around 200 of them, below the age of 18. Another 100 of them over the age of pension age. And they live all over the community. We see people we've seen people coming back now in the last few days, coming to visit here. And they're going back. Some of them is the first time coming back, and it's quite a shock. If you look at the buildings, you can see a lot of them are burnt. What happened to a lot of these homes were they would lock themselves in their security rooms or hold on to the handles, because you can't really lock the doors of the security rooms. But from the outside, they couldn't open it. And what we know from here and from other communities in the area is that terrorists would come in and they would fight with them to try and open it. If they couldn't, they actually set on fire other parts of the house and try in such a way that the people in these security rooms had one choice, either dying of asphyxiation, inside their rooms, or getting out through the windows or the door. The second they did that, they were gunned down. And this could, I can't believe anyone come up with an idea for this in a movie. That's what the shock is.
Anything else you want to share?
The first house on the left is the house of a very young girl, only 20 years old, who was slaughtered to death. And just next to her, 22-year-old girl. And you see that all the people who lived here were around 20 to 26 year old. This is the youngsters area. And actually their families with the other children, they are living on the opposite side of the kibbutz. And since you can see here, the border is so close, they actually entered from there and they just entered this area of all the youngsters and just slaughtered them, entered the houses and brutally tortured them and did all these atrocities that the human head cannot even comprehend. So also 17 people from Gaza were abducted and we are still waiting to hear what's going to happen with them, but we are doing everything that we can in order to bring them home safely and as soon as possible. On the other side are the most elderly people, but most of them left and are trying to find a place where they can stay until the kibbutz will be reconstructed. So they are either in Eilat or in Kibbutz Shfaim or other areas of Israel, because as you can see, it's not a place to come home to right now until it will be reconstructed, and it will be reconstructed.
How long do you think that's going to take?
Hopefully as quickly as possible. You know, the grass has to grow back again, you know?
We went on to speak with Hanan Dan, who is a resident of Kfar Aza. He has two children, 1 4-year-old and 1 1-year-old. His parents were born in the United States, and that's why you'll notice he has great English. Take a listen to what he has to say about being displaced from his home and his hopes for peace with his neighbors just down the road.
If you agree.
Yeah, we don't feel it, but you know, we're all refugees. We're not just talking about Kfar Aza, okay? We're talking about hundreds of thousands of Israelis, also from the area of Gaza, up to cities like Ashkelon and Netivot and Ofakim. Tens of thousands of people from each one of those cities have been evacuated. Talking about tens of thousands of Israelis have been evacuated from the northern border. And they're all evacuated into hotels or to family. But the truth is it's a small country. There's no one to really escape to. You know, a lot of us went down to Eilat in the southernmost point of Israel. We thought that's the safest point until we started getting missiles from Yemen. So, yeah, there's like hundreds of thousands of refugees inside Israel right now. But truth is, you know, we're refugees, but there really is nowhere to hide. There really is nowhere to run to.
What would you say is the most painful part of this whole experience for you?
The kidnapped. It's you can say what you want, but you know, everything dwarfs. There's been deaths and murders and devastated families and people burnt alive, but the wound, which is still open and is still becoming worse as time passes, are the abducted civilians, elderly women and children. My son is 4 years old. Two of his classmates are now in Gaza. We tried to explain this to him, but he doesn't have the concepts to understand this. We tried to tell him that Avigail and Uriya are now in Gaza and they're being held captive. So what does that mean? He thinks of it as terms of like hide and seek. And the good guys, the good soldiers are going to look for them and bring them out. But think about, you know, my boy or a girl or your child, 2 or 3 or 4 years old, inside a tunnel in Gaza, far away from loved ones, from parents. The one girl I know, she escaped from her father, who was holding her when he was shot. He was shot dead. She ran away to the neighbor's house. She found refuge there for some while until finally Hamas terrorists came and abducted the whole family, including her. And I know that girl. She's a friend of mine. She gave me high fives in school. You know, she's a friend of my son. This is something, you know, I wake up to every morning. It was with me every day. And it just dwarfs everything else. Getting the hostages out of Gaza, the kind of enemy that thinks that this is a reasonable act to kidnap women, children, elderly, as a legitimate role in a war, this is an enemy that's even human. This is just monstrosity. Who holds 3-year-old children as hostages?
Is there anything else that I didn't ask you about that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I just think, you know, today it's us, and I'm a normal person, you know? I go to jobs, I work on computers. My children, I recycle. I like music. And I didn't expect this to happen. This could happen to you. This could happen as unexpected. This could happen to basically anybody, you know? And we've had to learn the hard way. You know, we all thought that there would be some sort of peace in the future, some sort of reconciliation. That, yeah, we know Hamas wants to kill us, but, you know, they'll evolve. They'll grow up. They'll take responsibility. They'll realize that they're no longer a terrorist organization. They're a sovereign. They have population to worry about. And we just have to learn the hard way that this isn't true, you know? The writing was on the wall, and we refused to read it. And now we just know the hard way. This is it.
Yeah. His stories were just wild and touching, weren't they? Now let's hear from 33-year-old Jamal Moraki, who comes from the central Israeli city of Rehovot, which has both Jews and Muslims. I looked it up, and in 2019, there were only 365 Muslims living in this historically Jewish city, though parts of this city's suburbs used to belong to an Arab village before 1948. He has been volunteering for Zaka for 13 years. Zaka is a search and rescue organization that works on something called Chesed Shel Emes, or Emet, true virtue, if you would translate it to English. This unit tries to honor the dead and ensure a full Jewish burial, and for that to happen, all the body parts, pieces, and blood need to be collected. This interview is really going to change the way that you understand that when Israel entered this war, it entered the war for all its population, not just the Jews. And this is something that I really want to share to you from the bottom of my heart, going through this experience of reporting on this war. I have spoken with so many different people. This war did not just affect the Jews. There were many people that live in Israel that are not Jewish that have spoken out, and also understanding the sheer number of Arab Israelis and Bedouins and Druze that go into war in Gaza because they speak Arabic has been shocking for me. People that I've interviewed that went down to the border and are giving pep talks to young Israelis, soldiers that are going into Gaza and then realizing that they're not Jews. They are other parts of Israeli society that I think the global population does not realize that we have here. There are about 2 million non-Israelis in this country, and this country has a little more than 9 million people. So a little more than 7 million are Jews. All of the various populations in Israel are now working together. The Christians, the Muslims, the Druze, the Circassians, the Maronites, the list goes on. Reporters got to ask this 33-year-old volunteer some questions about his work. Keep an ear out. You're going to hear me at the end ask him which memory has stuck out in his mind since he started to do this work. And I also asked him how his Arab-Israeli counterparts are responding to him volunteering with Jews.
I was here actually when it started in a Black Saturday. I was the first ambulance who got into the conflict zone, and they even shot at my ambulance when I first got here. I just want to say that as a Arab Muslim, it's what happened here didn't show is any kind of point of Islam. Our religion doesn't give us any right to, or doesn't allow us to kill children, elderly people, or women, and we're not even allowed to even cut a tree. What happened here was terrorism. It actually came out of hatred. It has nothing to do with any kind of religion. I feel like I'm supposed to give my people, my brothers here, Jews, Israelis, the right, and I'm happy that I had the chance to help them here, and we hope to a better days. Actually, in the first couple of days, we were our unit were responsible about taking the care of the slaughtered and murdered people. And now, what we have in the religion, in Jewish religion, we have to make a closure and take every single blood stain or anything that that is on the zone, and make sure that it comes to into the land. We bury it. So our volunteers now doing this, making as much as they can. So they gather all the things so they can make closure to the families and make sure that slaughtered and murdered people get their own respect and they can rest in peace.
Is it hard for you to process being a Muslim yourself, what is going on, how the Palestinians feel?
I'm pretty sure that a lot of people feels like me. That what happened here wasn't even fair. It's not fair. They asked for it. They asked for what happens here. We give them all the rights to stay in Israel. They had all the chances to do whatever they need in Israel, come work, get money, and give it to their families. And what happened here that they decided to make this crime. And since then, I'm actually with my country. I'm sure that we are doing the right thing. There is nothing that we should be sorry for, because we are defending our country.
What has been something that you've seen that sticks out to you? I know you've seen a lot of things, but is there one memory that you can't get rid of?
Of course. Well, actually, what happens here is it's all the same from our side, but the thing that stuck in my mind was a family of five people that got slaughtered, three children and parents. They were tied hands back, and they were put on their knees, the parents in front of the children, as three and two, and they got shot in the head, and like they were shooted in front of their families. The thing was, when you are taking care of this zone, you're just thinking who they murdered first, the parents or the kids. It was so difficult for us, and it was pretty, from my side, it was pretty cannibalic even. I don't think that it's even human. How a human can kill children? When we are talking about 5, 4, and 3 years old, we're not talking about even teenagers. And that's one of the, from my side, it was the most hard zone I've ever been here.
What's the feedback that you're getting from your community members? Are they in support of you? Are you getting anyone saying
Of course, there's two types of people in my community. There's the people who wants to live in peace, and they are backing me up. And in the same time, I'm getting a couple of threats. I'm getting that you're not supposed to be here. You need to be on the other side. But I don't give a care. I know that what I'm doing is right, and I'm gonna be always in the same way. What I do, I never regret what I do.
The name of your
pretty shocking and yet strong, powerful testimonies in that piece of work that you just heard. All original, all straight from the source. And the beauty of the podcast is that we don't operate between commercial breaks. So I can let that baby run. If I have a soundbite that is amazing. When I used to work in the TV industry, I would have to cut everything into about 30 seconds. I love this podcast because I get to really play you people's full remarks. And that's pretty awesome, if you ask me. I want to thank all of you for your interest in Israeli affairs, Israeli politics, our world politics. I'm sure that you all see that now. I've been saying that for 4 years. I'm sure you all see that now. I also want to thank all of you who personally finance and fund the Israel Daily News Podcast with monthly contributions. You can support us with monthly contributions by going over to anchor.fm/Israel Daily News. You can contribute whatever feels good to you. Listener support is literally what helps me continue down this road of independent journalism so that I can do the work the way that I think it should be done. And more than anything, I want to thank all of you for your words of affirmation. Those words get me into my recording chair. I also want to offer you an opportunity to make a one-time contribution. So if you don't want to fund monthly, you can make a one-time contribution to our special wartime coverage, which I am taking very seriously. You can type in my name, Shanna Fold, and GoFundMe into Google. You'll find me right away, or you can go to gofundme.com/Shanna Fold. Thank you to our latest subscribers and our latest contributors. If you have heard your name, because I read out everyone's name who contributes to the show, if you heard your name read in a previous podcast, or if you're an anonymous donor and you just want to send me an email and let me know that you sent something so that I could connect with you, send me an email to shannafold@gmail.com, and I'll respond with a handwritten note to show my appreciation. I've just sent out a batch of thank you notes, and I would love to send more thank you notes to all of you who have given and contributed, so please do send your mailing address. All right, well, that is it for today's show. Today is Tuesday, December 26th, 2023. Subscribe to the Israel Daily News Podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you're hearing it from. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. The Israel Weekly News Wrap is a newsletter with the top five stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week. And of course, with a personal note from me at the top. I love writing out my personal notes in the newsletter. It gives me an opportunity to connect with people in a personal way that I can't always do in the podcast, or to let you know what I'm working on. So I really appreciate that. I have two stories coming out in the Jerusalem Post this week. I'll link those in the newsletter. And of course, you can sign up for that at israeldaily.news. A big thank you goes out to our social media director. And I'm going to send you off now with a song that's been remade by Nicole Raviv featuring Yair Levy called Gesher Tzar Me'od. And yes, that is her singing in Arabic. Enjoy this piece and have a great and productive day.
The whole entire world is a very narrow bridge, a very narrow bridge, a very narrow bridge. The whole entire world is a very narrow bridge, a very narrow bridge. But the main thing to recall, do not fear, do not fear at all. But the main thing to recall, do not fear at all. جسرا ضيق جدا جسرا ضيق جدا جسرا ضيق جدا العالم كله جسرا ضيق جدا جسرا ضيق جدا Yeah.